Time for us to talk some basketball. John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, and the Locked On Celtics podcast joins us to bring his own special brand of sunshine. Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Going all right. I mean, other than that weather, but boy, it's been a pretty interesting week for Celtics fans here. Let's talk about the big trade first. First, Marcus Smart. I think a lot of fans felt this way. They loved the passion that he brought to the game. There were times when he would make you crazy, but they certainly respect and appreciate everything he gave to this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Even if you didn't like what he brought on the floor, you have to appreciate the fact that he went all out every day, tried to make plays. I think his ultimate goal was always winning. He's just, I think he should have been a bigger cult hero in Boston than he really was, because he's the exact type of player that Boston has always seemed to love, that hardworking guy that maybe not as good as everybody else, but will go out there and do everything he could to win. So, yeah, I think when he comes back, that first Memphis game in Boston, you're going to see exactly how much he was loved.
Who's the biggest beneficiary from his departure?
Well, I'd say Derek White is one of the candidates there, because he gets certainly starter minutes and gets an expanded role. Peyton Pritchard is a candidate there because he goes from a limited role to, I think, a more at least third guard, kind of maybe 15 minutes a game type of role. So those two guys for sure have opportunities to kind of get more out of one less guard in the rotation.
Now, you wrote about this, John. This deal was obviously it's about players, but it's also about finances too. And this is certainly the first deal that's not just part of the new collective bargaining agreement, but in many ways brought about by it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if Marcus Smart, if this CBA wasn't in place, I still think Marcus Smart might be a Celtic. I don't know if they would have gone down this road necessarily. Hard to say, but this summer, this is all like a big cascading kind of reaction to the new collective bargaining agreement. Guys with these big salaries on longer-term deals, it just becomes a little bit more palatable to trade him than it would have been in the past, and it makes financial sense to do it this way. And if they continue, who knows what Brogdon or Grant Williams will bring, what those situations will bring. But the Celtics are very clearly operating with finances in mind, and so is the league. You know, you look around and you see Jordan Poole get moved. We saw John Collins get moved for basically nothing. We've seen moves around the league that say the teams with big payrolls are afraid of this new collective bargaining agreement for sure.
We're talking with John Corrales here on Downtown. So how does the addition of Porzingis change the way the Celtics will play next year? What do they do differently with that big guy in the lineup for hopefully 60-plus games?
Yeah, he does add a different element to this offense. He's obviously 7'3", and you can dump him in, dump the ball into him, and he can post up. This past season, he had his highest efficiency clip scoring in the post. He scored it on 60% of possessions, which is incredible, better than Joel Embiid. So if you think of Joel Embiid as a post player, Porzingis had a better year in the post than he did. And it's a bit of an upward swing. So you obviously he's a three-point shooter. He shot 38.5% last season. So Joe Mazzulla, if he sticks to, you know, the heavy three-point shooting offense, definitely has a stretch five there that can pick and pop and plant in the corner, and you have to account for him on the perimeter. But at the same time, in one of those, you know, those possessions where the Celtics always infuriatingly work the clock down to about 8 seconds on the shot clock and then get stuck, Well, that's a spot where now you can get it to Porzingis, and he can take a shot that is pretty efficient. And on the defensive side, his rim protection numbers last year were a very, very high clip, one of the best in the league. You can start him as your center and go with four smaller guys. You can put Rob out there. You can put a big-time defensive lineup out there. And if he continues defending the rim at the rate that he did last season, then you have the potential for the Celtics to have a really, really strong defense, especially if they go with him and Rob. No one's going to want to go within 8 feet of the rim. So the Celtics have the potential. We'll see it in practice. We don't know how it's going to actually look, but they have the potential to increase their efficiency on both ends of the floor.
Brad Stevens did his best Bill Belichick in the draft last week, traded down, got himself some extra picks, and then picked up Jordan Walsh from Arkansas. What does he bring to the table?
Well, he's a young guy. He's a skinny guy. So as far as what are you going to see from him in Boston this next season, not much outside of some towel waving or maybe some garbage time minutes. But those of you who want to head to Portland, there'll be plenty of him there. And you'll see a guy who's a real strong defensive player. If he can work on his strength and hold his spots, he can be a special defensive player. He's 6'6", but he's got a 7'2 wingspan. He's got great lateral movement. He's got good instincts on the defensive end. He prides himself on that end of the floor. He's a little bit of a lunatic on that end of the floor. So that's a welcome addition after losing Marcus Smart. He's not the best shooter in the world, but last season he shot about 28.5% from three. But in the second half of the college season, he shot 35%, which is, you know, obviously an encouraging development. And Brad Stevens believes that he's got a good touch, and that's something that he can work on as well. So for now, defensive specialist, and I would expect him to maybe be on a two-way contract. And he can hone those skills in Maine, and maybe he can add a jump shot and be a 3-and-D guy.
And are those extra draft picks even more valuable with this new CBA?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've kind of anticipated with the way teams are committed to, you know, a lot of teams are committed with their first-round picks. The way the salaries are just under the microscope, I think second-round picks have the potential to be very, very valuable, even more valuable than we realize now, because they don't come with guaranteed salary slots. And if you can kind of avoid some of that, and like I just said with Walsh, they can draft a guy, develop him for a couple years, and have him on the two-way deal. The two-way deal still pays them $500,000, so it's not nothing. You know, you make a nice little living playing in Maine and playing in that G League. And if in a couple of years he has the opportunity to step up, and that's when you start paying him the guaranteed money. That's a big deal to have a guy for 2 years rather than those end of first round guys who are similarly talented, I think, to a lot of the second rounders. You're developing them for 2 years and you're paying them guaranteed money. Well, after that, you now have a couple of years with them on their rookie contracts before you have to decide, am I going to give this guy a big raise or am I not? So it just offers you a little bit more flexibility. And we've seen second rounders facilitate trades recently. A lot of guys are being moved for a combination of second round picks. And so having four future picks from other teams that you can play with is a big deal. Maybe the Celtics make a move over the course of this season where they dip into that, and that helps them make a deal that they wouldn't have been able to make before.
What are the next moves for the Celtics? Who do you see maybe being shipped out or possibly brought in?
Well, I'm very curious to see what they do with Malcolm Brogdon.
Mm.
You know, he was traded, right? So right. He was on his way out. He was in L.A. said, well, never mind. So it's hard to kind of get that back sometimes. And he's a pro. He gets it. But if there are hurt feelings, there are hurt feelings, and that's hard to kind of get back. And you just don't want that lingering in a locker room. So I'm curious to see what they do with Brogdon. Obviously, Grant Williams is a restricted free agent. His free agency is going to be very, very interesting because I don't know what his value is anymore because of this new collective bargaining agreement. I'm very curious. Are the Celtics, there's the potential for them to pay him more than he was asking for because they want to be able to trade a guy in a couple years for a mid-level type contract. Take a look at what Minnesota just did with Naz Reid. They gave him $14 million per year, and that seems like a little bit more than Naz Reid would normally get, but that's right around mid-level money, so he becomes a very tradable contract in the next couple years. So Celtics could do that. They could try a sign-and-trade, or they could just let him walk for some cap relief. I just don't know which of those ways they're going to go with him.
John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, the Locked On Celtics podcast. John, we thank you as always. We'll be on a little show vacation next week, so have a good 4th, and we'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Talk to you then. Have a happy 4th of July.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.